All right, so we are holding. We're going to begin the ninth parak on Nun Chesed, continuing on the topic of tamim, of the blood stains that are found when we say that the woman is tamim, when not. The Mishnah starts off, Ha'isha she'i oisef tzrachah, a woman who was urinating, was doing her need, meaning she was urinating, v'ras adam, and she saw blood while she was urinating. So is she tamim or not? Rav Meir Omer, so Rav Meir says, we've learned this before, if she was standing when she urinated, then she's tamei, and if she was sitting, then she's tamei. We'll see, we discussed the other day briefly, and the Gemara is going to explain over here in more detail that basically it has to do with whether there's a possibility that urinary retention may have caused, or holding it back, or whatever, may have caused that some of it then, that there's backflow to the uterus, which then could cause that now blood comes from the uterus together with the urine. There is, by the way, earlier in the Masechta, in the second parak, we talked about a machloikus in the Gemara. Is it that Reb Meir is saying that she's tome on the ground, that definitely then, if she was standing, we have to assume that the blood that she finds came from the uterus, as opposed to if she was sitting, then the likelihood that it came from some other part of her anatomy? Or is it that even Reb Meir is saying not necessarily is she tamei on the grounds of Re'ia, but she's tamei on the Rabbanon grounds of Kesem, because a stain was found where we don't have necessarily the Svek Seka that we talked about before. You know, maybe it came from her, maybe not, and even if it came from her, did it come from the uterus? Because in this case, it obviously came from her. So therefore, in this case she found it, let's say in the bowl that she was in, or whatever, and whatever it is that she urinated into. But nevertheless, obviously it came from her. Okay, that's Reb Meir. Reb Yossi and Reb Ben Kach, Reb Ben Kach Tahora. Reb Yossi says either way she's Tahor, whether she was standing or sitting, because Rashi explains that Rabbi Yossi would say basically you only have the one suffix. Did it come from the uterus or did it come from someplace else? Rather, what Rashi is referring to is actually the next case in the Mishnah where we have here we only have one suffix, and Rabbi Yossi says she's Tahor. In the next case we're going to have there's two suffixes, and Rabbi Yossi says she's Tahor. The Gemara is going to. So he's saying she's Tahor because he says, as we're going to see in the Gemara, because he holds that it's unlikely that the blood, that there was this backflow and that the blood came from the uterus. But we'll see in the Gemara the exact detail. Okay.
But let me ask you a question, a simple question.
Yeah.
When she sees blood, whether she's standing or sitting,
right,
and she checks herself.
If she checks herself right afterwards.
Not inside, but outside. Outside, there's no blood. How could it come from inside?
Because you could have it was just one drop of blood, but that's enough, right? We learned before that one drop is enough to make
blood.
Not necessarily, because it may have been washed away by the urine. So not necessarily. Okay. Anyway, but the fact of the matter is, even if she does a bedikah and doesn't find anything, doesn't mean that there wasn't. Doesn't mean. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the fact of the matter is there is blood, so it obviously came from somewhere from her. The only question is if it came from the uterus or not. Okay. Another case. Ish v'isha she'osu tzrachayim l'seicha seifel. Suppose now...
By the same token, in reverse, you could have blood from the bladder.
That's true. And
blood from the bladder...
is not metameir. That is true. And that is why Reb Meir is making the distinction between standing and sitting, where in one case there's a possibility that the blood came from the uterus, and in the other case there's no possibility of it. And Reb Yossi is saying, either way, I don't consider it to be a possibility that it came from the uterus. Necessarily it came from some other part, from the bladder or what have you. But we'll see. Well, again, we'll see in the Gemara. There'll be a little more detail about it. Okay. Another case. Suppose that both a man and a woman urinated into a bowl. The nimsa dam alamayim, and later on you find blood floating on the water. So is she tame or not? Rabbi Yossi matanah, Rabbi Shimon matanah. Rabbi Yossi says again she's tar, and here's where Rashi says that even in the previous case there was only the one suffix. We know it came from her, and yet Rabbi Yossi is saying the likelihood is it came from her bladder or what have you, rather than from her uterus. How much more so over here, where you have it may not have come from her at all. It may b'chlal have come from the man. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says she's Tahor. We'll see in the Gemara actually why we need to present Rabbi Yossi's opinion in both cases. But Rabbi Shimon Matame, whereas Rabbi Shimon says she's Tahor, because he says, You're saying, Rabbi Yossi, that there's a safeholder bowl, a bowl, a basin, whatever, yeah. So Rabbi Shimon says she's Tomei, she'en derech ha'ish lahotzi dam, because it's not normal for a man to produce blood. Most of the time, when we find blood, there's a stronger chazaka that came from the woman. El shechel sif damim in Asia. The chazaka is that blood comes from the woman. So therefore, similar to, the Gemara is going to discuss, does Rav Shimon actually agree fully with Rav Meir in the beginning of the Mishnah? We'll see in the Gemara. But the point is, and in other words, it's a similar idea, that basically, you Rav Yossi, want to say there's a double suffix over here. Is it from the man or from the woman? And if it's from the woman, is it from her uterus? Rav Shimon says, never mind that. The likelihood is it comes from where the chazaka is and it comes from her. So it's only a question, did it come from the uterus or from some other place? And then we can't say that she's taller because of that suffix. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Maishna Omeya. Now, what's the difference? Why are we saying, why is Rav Meir saying that if she was standing when she urinated, then we say she's Tomei? I'm Yunin because we say Meira Glaim Hodr Lamakar. What may have happened over here is that urine backed up to the uterus, the icy dam, and now it brought along blood with it that came from the uterus. In that case, Yoshemeth Nami. Shouldn't the same thing apply if she was sitting? Name a Meira Glaim Hodr Lamakar Vaisi Dam. Couldn't the same thing happen if she's sitting as well? What's the difference? The answer is almost Shmuel b'mizan nefesh. The answer is Shmuel says what we're talking about, where the urine is coming out very forcefully. Mizan nefesh means like a jet, like a strong jet of urine. So what does that change? So that's the question. Mizan nefesh nami. So what? Even that. Maya osadam. So what? So what could have happened is she urinated very forcefully, a jet of urine, and then after that, let's say maybe some blood came out of the uterus as well. The answer is Amar Rab Abba b'yeshevus ha'spas ha'seifel u'mzanekes b'seich ha'seifel. What we're talking about, Rab Abba says, is that she was sitting on the edge of the basin. She was sitting on the edge. She wasn't sitting directly over the middle of the basin. She was sitting on the edge of it, and was a necklace to say chaseichel. She's jetting out urine into the bowl itself, not just on the edge of it, but into the bowl itself. Now, where do we find the blood? We find it actually inside, in the middle of the basin, not just on the edge of it. So she was sitting on the edge, but we find the blood in the middle of it. Therefore, we know it can't have been from her uterus. The Issa Debasa de Tamu Maya Osa. If you were going to say that after she finished urinating, then blood came out, Al Sfasa Seifeli Barilei Leish Tekochi. You would expect to find it on the edge of the basin because that's where she was sitting. So the fact that you find it in the middle, therefore, implies that it came out together with the urine, and therefore, in other words, that it came from the bladder.
Not necessarily.
Well, but that's the assumption, in other words, because the fact that if it came from the uterus, she was, after all, sitting on the edge. The urine itself didn't go onto the edge. It went directly into the middle of the basin. Therefore, if the blood is also there in the middle of the basin, then there's more reason to say that they came together. And therefore, so in other words, then it would come together. That's what we mean. In other words, when we say in the middle of the basin, in other words, there's urine in the basin, and there's also blood mixed in with the urine. Well, obviously, I mean, at the end, now, yeah, two liquids. I mean, they're two liquids that are miscible, you know. So you're gonna have at the end, you're gonna have the.
Well, the blood that you keep in the bowl, where is it?
It's in the middle of the bowl. No, it's mixed in with the urine.
Okay,
well, that's what. In other words, as opposed to on the edge of the bowl. It's not.
It's mixed in with the urine.
No. But the point is, it's not on the edge, which is where she was sitting. Which, in other words, you have to consider like this. The reason why Shmuel is mentioning the point that the urine came out forcefully is because urine comes out forcefully. It comes out mizanekes as a jet, as opposed to blood from the uterus doesn't come out forcefully like that. It drips out. It dribbles out. So therefore, in other words, if Rav Abba is saying if she's sitting on the edge. And we find, then we're saying that because the blood, if it comes from the uterus, dribbles out, then you would expect to find it on the edge, right where she was sitting, on the walls of the basin. Because instead we find it in the middle, in the same place where the urine landed, then we assume it came out in the same jet with the urine. And what do you mean it doesn't make sense?
If it comes the same jet of urine, then it should not stay in the middle. It should be everywhere where the urine is.
In the middle doesn't mean exactly in the middle. I mean, we mean, in other words, inside the bowl as opposed to on the edges. It's not being mixed with urine. It is. That's what we're saying. The soich ha-seifel, the nympha dam, the soich ha-seifel, and we find blood inside the bowl, meaning not on the edges of the bowl. That's what we mean. We don't mean we find one drop of blood in the middle. We mean that we find the blood inside. In other words, there's no blood on the walls of the basin, just on the surface of the water, and then the same surface where the urine is. So therefore, in other words, that's the point. If it was blood that dribbled out of the uterus, then you would expect to find it on the edge. Then, yeah, that's the point. In other words, maybe not. But the point is, at least you wouldn't find it. You wouldn't find it only on the inside of the basin together with the urine. So therefore, we have to assume it came from the bladder, from an injury or whatever that she has in the bladder. So the point is, in other words, the fact that it was a forceful jet of urine means that it didn't back up to the uterus, because otherwise it would have kind of dribbled out also. That's how Rashi explains. Tosfos has a bit of a problem with Rashi's explanation. Basically, part of the argument is Rashi explains basically that when the woman is standing, it's impossible for her to forcefully jet out the urine. Necessarily, it's going to dribble out. Therefore, because Rashi explains, if she's standing, basically it means like she was really desperate. She was really desperate to go. She couldn't even wait to sit down. She's about to wet herself. So therefore, it doesn't come out in a forceful scream. It comes out. It sort of dribbles out. But Tosfos disagrees with that concept, and says that no, even if she's standing conceivably, because after all, Tosfos says, because if that's the distinction, why are you distinguishing between standing and sitting? Distinguish between a jet, between a strong jet versus a dribble, and it wouldn't matter standing or sitting. Right. Well, that's essentially what Rashi is saying. But Tosfos is saying, if that's the essential distinction, why mention standing or sitting? Talk about, was it a strong jet or was it a dribble? And in other words, it wouldn't matter if she's sitting. It could be either way. And yeah. So okay. Tosfos says that fine. You could still. And for Rashi, because you could say when she's standing, it's always going to be dribbling, as opposed to when she's sitting, it could be either way. So therefore, that's the distinction. But anyway, okay. Tosfos learns differently anyway. For purposes of question, we assume that there's no difference how it came out, whether it was a dribble or a forceful jet. Tosfos ends up explaining that basically we're talking about a question of do you need two factors to the good to be matar, or is one factor to the good enough?
Which is, in other words,
the place where you found the blood, and also the jet. Right. This comes up as a practical matter in halacha, because how we understand the Gemara over here affects. The Gemara is going to say the next thing that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, but the question which that we're making, but the question is, would Rabbi Yossi at least partially agree with Rabbi Meir about the possible differences between standing and sitting, or between dribbling and then forceful and a forceful jet? Like this, Rabbi Yossi says Bein Kach or Bein Kach Tahora, but does he mean in all cases, whether she's standing or sitting, whether it was a forceful jet or a dribble, either way she's always Tahora, because we always assume that the blood came from the bladder or what have you, or is Rabbi Yossi saying that maybe Rabbi Yossi is saying there's a difference. In some cases, yes, she'll be taller, but not in all cases. There'll still be something she wouldn't need. There would still be a case. For example, if she's standing and it dribbled, then we might still say she's coming. So that affects the actual halacha. Plus, on top of that, you have the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, which is what I was going to say too, but that's the question. In other words, in what cases is Rabbi Yossi arguing with Rabbi Meir, and in what cases might he agree with him? On top of that, you also have the opinion of Rabbeinu Hanano, who holds that even Rabbi Yossi would not say she's completely tahor. He says Rabbi Yossi would still say she's tumah on the grounds of Teflon, because after all, there was a blood stain found on something which is Mekabel Tumah. So if we take that view, then either way, she's Tomei. It's just a question, is she Tomei on a Zaraisa level or a Zerabon? It's a blood stain that obviously came from her, and we found it, right? The only question might be whether it's on something which is Mekabel Tumah. But water itself or urine themselves are able to be Mekabel Tumah. So, right, yeah.
Okay.
It was in the basin. So what? The basin is also Mekabel Tumah. Yeah. Actually, there is a bit of there is an interesting discussion that the Post can have nowadays. Our toilets are attached to the ground, so maybe they're not metallic toilets. In general, things that are attached to the ground. Well, they're attached to the plumbing, which in turn they're attached, whatever. They're attached to the plumbing and to the house. They're attached to the floor of the house, which in turn is attached to the ground. And generally, things that are attached to the ground are not metabolic toilets. Although, we learned in the previous paragraph that Tosfos had said that if something is able to be metabolic tumor of Tzolah, then it is subject to the tumor of Tzolah. Well, in that case, at least houses in Eretz Yisrael are subject to the tumor of Tzolah, because a house in Eretz Yisrael can get Tzolah. So in that case, maybe there'd be a difference between a toilet in Eretz Yisrael versus a toilet in Chutz La'aretz. So there's a good deal of discussion among them.
Without
the Tzolah? Yes. Tzolah is not dependent on the Okay, anyway, let's go on. Okay. Amar Shmuel, v'amri lo amir of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel says, or some say that Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Yosi. The halacha is like Rav Yosi, that ben kach or ben kach tahora, that either way she's tahor. Again, according to Rabbeinu Hanano, all that means is he's saying she's tahor on a daraisa level, but she's still tahor on a derabanan level because of the ketan. According to everybody else, it means Rav Yosi would be disagreeing with Rav Meir and saying that in certain cases she's tahor. But the question is, does he mean in all cases, whether standing, sitting, dribbling, or jetting? Or would he say that in certain cases, she, in certain cases, he would agree with Rav Meir that the urine may have backed up and brought along blood from the uterus? Shmuel says that halacha is like Rav Yosi, but we have to clarify what exactly is Rav Yosi.
Right. He says also that in order for her to be nourished,
that
here nobody talks about.
No, because we talked about in the previous paragraph. Actually, we mentioned this. We asked from this Mishnah on Shmuel, and we said that the hagosha of urination is easily confused with the hagosha of blood coming out.
We didn't mention that here,
because we mentioned in the previous paragraph and in Zion over there.
Well, here we're not mentioning
it. Because here we're not mentioning it, because we already mentioned it over there. But the fact is that according to Shmuel, you do need Hagosha to be Tomei on a Daraisa level.
But that's assumed here.
But that's assumed over here, because, yeah.
Okay.
B'chein oilulei Rav Abba l'kola, so also Rav Abba paskin for kola. Rashi says that kola is the name of a person who had such a shayla. Tosfos says it's the name of a chacham. But anyway, whatever, he paskin for him, halacha k'Rav Yosi, that indeed the halacha is like Rav Yosi. Again, though, what exactly that means is a little bit controversial. And you have, among others, a machlokes between the Mechaber and the Ramah about the exact parameters of when she's Tomei and when she's not. The Mechaber says that she's Tahor across the board. The Ramah says sometimes yes, sometimes not. Depends standing or sitting, depends jetting or dribbling, depends whether you find the blood inside the bowl or whether you find it on the edge. There's a number of different cases. So it's one thing, I guess, between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, I suppose, yeah. But there is actually, the Ramah does mention that if, for example, if she feels pain when she's urinating and then she finds the blood, then fine, you have a much stronger reason to say that it's a urinary tract infection or some such thing, and therefore that there'd be more reason to be makel and be metal. Okay, fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, Ish v'Isha l'chola, we said another case is a man and a woman urinated into the same basin, and later on we find blood in there. So what happens? We said Rabbi Yosi says she's Tahor, and Rabbi Shimon says she's Tamei. So, Iboyolahu, Ish v'Isha oimdin mali omer Rameir. What would Rabbi Meir say if both the man and the woman were standing when they urinated? Now, it's one thing. In the first case, the Mishnah of Meir says that if she was standing, then she's Tomei. But over here, again, you have a spectator, because maybe it came from her, and maybe it came from him. And even if it was from her, maybe it's from the uterus, maybe not. So would the Meir consider, because of the spectator, then he would be nakel. Ki omer of Meir b'chad spectator. So yeah, because over here you have the additional point, whether it's from the man or not. Right.
And
if it's from her, is it from the uterus? Right. Or somewhere else, right. Ki Amar Rav Meir b'chad speka. You could say that maybe Rav Meir would say that only when there's one suffix is he metame. Al v'spek speka loy metame. Maybe when there's a spek speka, then he would not be metame. Or Jom aloy shno. Maybe there's no difference. Maybe not. I mean, the whole remember, we've learned before. Keep in mind, we've learned before, the whole concept of kesem is a spek anyway, because you always have the suffix, did the blood come from her, and even if it did it come from her uterus? And still we say that there's a concept of summon, did abonim. So especially if we follow the view in the Gemara before on Dr. Dalit on the Bays, on the second barrack, that Rav Meir in our Mishnah is anyway only the time of her on the ground of kesem, then maybe there's no difference, even if it's a spek, fine, every case of kesem is a spek.
interesting.
Being that the
and from Nidravanan we make you, and then make her tummy from six days.
So we said in the previous teres, we said that Rabbi Akiva had said, the basic concept that when the tummy her for Kesin is Rabbanan, and that is a Chumra over the Din D'Oraisa, because the Oraisa, we got to know that it came from her or whatever, but nonetheless, within that, once we have that, then if we have what to be Tola on, then we can be made for, yeah. So we have okay. Amar Shlokish Hihi. So Rish Lakish says it's the same thing. Rav Meir would say in that case also she's Tomei. Mimai says Rish Lakish, where do I get that from? Midaloi Katani, Rav Meir, Rav Yosi Mitarin. Because in the Sefer we don't say that Rav Meir and Rav Yosi say she's Tomei. So obviously Rav Yosi says she's Tomei. Obviously Rav Meir is disagreeing. Okay, Tosfos says, so why don't we say the other way around? We said Rav Shimon says she's Tomei. It doesn't say Rav Meir and Rav Shimon say she's Tomei. So why don't we prove from that? It just says you have Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon. Rav Meir is not mentioned in the second part of the Mishnah. But Tosfos says, okay, but we couldn't have mentioned Rav Meir and Rav Shimon together because Rav Shimon says they're Tomei even if both of them were sitting, and Rav Meir was saying she's Tahir if they were sitting. So therefore, the fact that it doesn't mention Rav Meir together with Rav Shimon is no proof one way or the other. But the fact that it doesn't mention him together with Rabbi Yossi seems to be a strong proof that he wouldn't agree that she saw her in that case when there was a man and a woman urinating there. Rabbi Meir. Yeah. So therefore, Rish Lakish says, obviously the implication is Rabbi Meir would in fact be matamei her. So the Gemara asks, if you're going to say that, then what the hashter of Meir, the speck of matamei, if you're going to say, Rish Lakish, that Rabbi Meir is matamei even when there's a speck speka, the second case of the Mishnah, b'chad speka m'boya, does it need to be said that he would be matamei when there's only one suffix? So in that case, according to Rish Lakish, why is the Mishnah presenting Rabbi Meir's opinion only in the first case when there's one suffix? Let it present his opinion only in the second case when there's two spekas, a speck speka, and he's still matamei, and we would understand how much more so the first case. Yeah. The answer is, you're right, but the reason why we present the Mishnah, the Machlokas in the first part of the Mishnah, is to tell you how far Rav Yosi goes. That even when there's only one suffix, because it was only her, and the only question is, this come from her uterus or from elsewhere, and still Rav Yosi is Matar, so therefore we presented the Machlokas about that case. But yes, by implication, the Mishnah also implies that Rav Meir is Matamehu in both cases by not mentioning that Rav Meir is Matamehu in the second case, implying therefore these Matamehu. So the question is, in that case, instead of presenting the machlokes when there's one suffix to tell you how far Rav Yosi is willing to go, lift the good respect speaker, let it present the machlokes regarding the respect speaker, and that will tell you how far a mayor goes, that he's matame even by a respect speaker. So we're back to the question, why is it presenting the machlokes? So the answer is koyach de'atera odiko. The Mishnah would rather present the how far the one who's makel, the one who's matir, is willing to go, namely Rav Yosi. The reason for that, you have that expression in a number of places in Chaff. Rashi explains in Beitza and in some other places that the idea behind that is, if somebody is machmir, you don't know necessarily that he's machmir because he knows for a fact that that's the halacha. He may be machmir because he says, after all, you have a suffix over here and you got to be machmir, especially the mayor who cares about the mute. When we see that somebody is makel, that somebody is matir, that shows he's certain about what he's saying, because otherwise, how is he being matir? So therefore, whenever possible, the Mishnah will always try to present a machlokes in a way that highlights how far the one who's matir, the one who's makel, is willing to go with being makel. So therefore, that would explain why the Mishnah is presenting the machlokes in the case of only one suffix. But nevertheless, Rish Lakish is saying, nevertheless, the Mishnah doesn't leave us in the dark about what Rav Meir would say about the case of two speakers. It implies it by not saying that she would say, by not saying that he would say she saw her in that case. Okay.
You wouldn't have to bring that case up.
So in other words, the Mishnah presents it in the case of one suffix to tell you how far Rav Yosi goes, but you should know from the way the Mishnah phrases it that actually Rav Meir argues in both cases. Okay. That's all Rish Lakish. Whereas Rav Yechanan says, no. Rav Meir would only say his din when there's one suffix. In fact, Rav Yosef would say, when there's a sex faker, the second case of the Mishnah, there's a man and a woman that were both standing. In fact, Rav Meir would be matar, says Rav Yechanan.
That's the other view,
yeah.
Then the first one we said he would
be matame, that's Rish Lakish, and Rav Yechanan is saying that. Yeah. Because so the question is, if the same imkain, if you're gonna say that, listening Rameyer Rabbi Yossi Matarin, then shouldn't the Mishnah say that in the second case Rameyer and Rabbi Yossi say she's Tahar? After all, that's where Rish Lakish learned his implication that Rameyer is Matame precisely because it doesn't say that she's Tahar. So how does Rabbi Yossi understand that? The answer is Enochinami. You're right, the Mishnah could have mentioned that Rameyer is Matame, is Matar. But the idea, the solik, because the last opinion we mention in the Reisha is from Rabbi Yossi, so therefore in the Sefer we begin by mentioning Rabbi Yossi as well. Rabbi Yossi, So in other words, since the Reisha of the Mishnah, we had Rabbi Meir and then we had Rabbi Yossi, so therefore the Tana continues with Rabbi Yossi's view. But in fact, Rabbi Yochanan would say, actually there, Rabbi Meir would agree as well. The Tana just didn't mention Rabbi Meir as well. But we meant to understand that he would agree. So the question, so what does that mean? So then we have to ask, Rabbi Yossi b'chad speka metahar b'sek speka mebaya. In that case, then we have a similar question to before. If Rabbi Yossi is saying, even in the Reisha, where there's only one suffix that she's tahar, needless to say, he would say that she's tahar in the second case, where there's a sek speka. So in that case, yeah, if she's tahar even when there's one suffix, for sure she's tahar when there's a sek speka, according to Rabbi Yossi. So because the sek speka is weaker than a suffix.
If you're going to be sick, would that say not necessarily that she's tahor?
No. If you say that she's tahor, even when there's only one suffix, you know for a fact the blood came from her because nobody else urinated in this bowl. And still you're saying that Rabbi Yossi is matahor her because the blood didn't come from the uterus. It came from her bladder or what have you. How much more so when there's a sex fake and we don't know if it came from her, it may have come from the man, Bachlan. So then the question is, so in that case, why do we need Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Sefer? According to Rabbi Yochanan, you're telling me the reason why we're mentioning Rabbi Yossi in the Sefer is because we finished with him in the Reisha. We presented his opinion second in the Reisha. No, but the point is, in other words, why would it need to mention it at all? Instead, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that a mayor is matahar her in the case of Sfek Sefer, the Mishnah should in fact, in the Sefer, mention only the mayor is matahar. We would understand, obviously, all the more so Rabbi Yossi says that she in the Reisha, the mayor says she's coming. Right. Rabbi Yossi says she's tahor. In the Sefer, with respect to Sefer, let the Mishnah just say Rabbi Meir says she's tahor. We would understand how much more so Rabbi Yossi says she's tahor, because if even a Sefer is a tahor, how much more so respect to Sefer. So why mention Rabbi Yossi's opinion and leave out the Meir? The answer is, Mao de Tema, Hani Milidji Eved, because if you didn't have Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Sefer, you would say maybe Rabbi Yossi would only say she's tahor Bidi Eved. So let's say, for example, you have this case of sex faker. Let's say she figured, okay, well, the blood probably didn't come from me, and she went and started, when the two people urinated, right? And let's say then she went and worked with Taurus, was preparing food of Taurus. Then we would say, okay, but yeah, but we're not having the time of the Taurus after the fact. But maybe Rabbi Yossi would say that Lachila, she shouldn't be working with Taurus, even though there is only a sex baker. Kamash Malan, that is why the Mishnah would tell us in the Sefer that Rabbi Yossi holds she's Tahar, in other words, even Tahar Lachila. So she could even work with Taurus, Lachila, because Rabbi Yossi is saying that because even in the Reisha, he says she's Tahar, how much more so in the Sefer? So there's no concern that she's Tahar and there's no concern about her working with Taurus. It's how much more so in the Sefer, with the special Sefer, right? But the reason why, we asked, why do we need that? Isn't it obvious Rabbi Yossi would be the Tahar? And the reason is because we want to be informed that Rabbi Yossi would say she's Tahar even the Hachila, not just the Dievet. If she worked with Taurus, we're going to retire them, but even the Hachila, she's allowed to work with Taurus in this case.
Even with two Sefers, you could not necessarily say that she's Tahar
the That's what we would have thought, right? Maybe only the Dievet, right? So that's the machlokas of Meir, and that's the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, how to understand Rabbi Meir's opinion. So we say Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yochanan, we learn a braisa in accordance with Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Meir, that again, Rabbi Meir would be the Tahar in the second case, the second baker. The braisa says, Ish v'isha sh'osu tzolcheihem l'fech ha'sechol. A man and a woman both urinated into a bowl, v'nimta dam al ha'mayim, and you find blood on the surface of the water. Rameyu Rabbi Yossi Matarin, Rameyu and Rabbi Yossi says she's Tahir, which is what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. According to Rish Lakish, it would have had to say Rameyu says she's Tomei. But Rabbi Shimon Matamei, whereas Rabbi Shimon says she's Tomei, because as he said in the Mishnah, you don't generally have blood from the man, and therefore the Chazaka is the blood came. Okay. Ibarim.
So now, doesn't
say that. Rabbi Yossi says that we assume it came from the bladder or what have you. Ibarim. So now we have a question the other way around. Before we were asking what happens if the man and the woman both urinated into the bowl and the woman was standing, what would the mayor say? That's the case of Sekseka. Now, what about Isha Yosheves Mali Amar Rav Shimon? What would Rav Shimon say in the case where she was sitting? Again, Rav Meir had said that if she's sitting, then she's Tahir, because then we don't assume that the urine backed up to the uterus and then brought along blood with it. We assume that any blood came from the bladder or some other part or whatever. So what would Rav Shimon say in that case? Ki Amar Rav Shimon Ba'imedes, we would say that Rav Shimon says his opinion only if she was standing. The Dochik Lo Alma, where she's very desperate to urinate, the very fact that she's standing shows that she's about to wet herself and she doesn't even have the time to sit down, and therefore there's a much higher likelihood that in the course of holding back the urine, it backs up to the uterus and then brings along blood with it. So maybe only in that case. Alma Yosheves Loi, so therefore that wouldn't apply when she's sitting, like Rav Meir says. Or maybe Rav Shimon would say there's no difference. Blood can always be assumed to come from her sitting or standing. Yeah. And once we assume it comes from her, then we would assume it comes from the uterus. Toshma, bring a proof to Tanya, Lona Breiter. Yesheves Tola, if she was sitting, then she can attribute the blood to some other part of her anatomy. Omedes ain't a toilet, but if she was standing, then she can't attribute it to anything else. Because we said before, when she was standing, then it means she had to hold back her urine. She was very desperate to go. And therefore, when she's sitting, it shows that she's not that desperate. It means, therefore, that and we said before, we mentioned about what Shmuel said, that it was a forceful jet, and the blood is found on the surface of the water. So therefore, it's not likely that it dribbled out of the uterus. Yeah. So Rameyer says that it depends whether she's standing or sitting. Rabbi Yossi and Ben Kach or Ben Kach Tola. Rabbi Yossi says either way she can attribute the blood to something else, not to the uterus, like we said in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon and Ben Kach or Ben Kach ain't a Tola. And Rabbi Shimon says either way she cannot attribute it to anything else. So you see that Rabbi Shimon does not make a distinction whether she's standing or sitting. Either way he says she's talking. So we have three different opinions. We have Rav Meir, Rav Yossi, and Rav Shimon. Rav Yossi saying it doesn't matter, standing or sitting, she's always Tahir, subject to the details that we said before about what Rav Yossi would say exactly about dribbling versus jetting. But anyway, Rav Yossi is the most maple, standing or sitting, it doesn't matter, she's Tahir. Rav Shimon is the most machmir, standing or sitting, it doesn't matter, she's Tahir. And Rav Meir takes a middle view, depends whether she's standing or sitting. Okay. So now we have a question. What would Rav Shimon say if, besides the fact that she was sitting, on top of that, you also have there was a man there who sat, and now therefore you have a possibility of sex maker again, where now you have the possibility that the blood came from him.
And he's the most
machmir. So what would he say? Ki Amar Rav Shimon Omedes. Maybe Rav Shimon would say his opinion that he's machmir only if she was standing. The Dochik Lo Alma. Where, because again, she's very desperate to go, and therefore she has to hold back the urine, and therefore it's highly likely that it backed up, etc. So therefore, via Sheves the Chad Suffet, or he says, when she's sitting, where you only have the one Suffet, did the blood come from the uterus or from elsewhere, and therefore he's Makameh her on the grounds of the one Suffet, I'll with Sex Fake Aloy, but if you have a Sex Fake, because he or she was sitting, so there's not even necessarily that come from the uterus, and you also have the man urinated there as well, so it may b'chal have come from him, so maybe he would be Mekel, or maybe Rav Shimon would say it's no difference. Either way, she's coming. Toshma, we'll bring a proof. Given the Amr of Shimon Cheskas Damim in Isha, given that Rav Shimon says in our Mishnah, the Chazaka is that blood comes from the woman, and he uses the word Chazaka, that means, in other words, he considers there's no possibility that it came from the man. Therefore, even when she's sitting, and even when also a man urinated over there, Rav Shimon is saying Chazaka is that the blood came from her. Therefore, we're back to only one suffix, and one suffix we know is the time. Therefore, Loishna Obdin or Loishna Yeshvin. So it doesn't matter whether she or he was standing or sitting. Either way, Rav Shimon is going to be the time. Okay. again, we said halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. It's like Rabbi Yossi, subject to the details of what exactly he would say. So we're mekel. We're mekel. However, there are the fine details over there about skin. About jetting versus dribbling. Where in some cases, if she was standing, again, you have Tosfos and that. You have Rashi and Tosfos arguing over the point. Is it possible for her to jet out the urine when she's standing, or is it necessarily always going to dribble? And once it dribbles, then you have the possibility that blood may be dribbling along with it also. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then it's more like
the uterine. So then it could be uterine, and then we would say she's tummy. So right.
We never say that it's urine is dribbling while she's standing.
No, but the
probably bladder.
Well, the point is, in other words, so like this, sit here, I'll read you what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So, okay, a woman urinates, blood comes out with her urine, whether she was standing or sitting, she's tahor, even if she fell to her gosha, even if she trembled, she doesn't have to worry, because that's just the sensation of urination.
Okay.
This is a mechaber, right? He's quoting the Rambam, pretty much word for word. Because then the urine obviously doesn't come from the uterus, so therefore this must mean that she has some kind of injury in her bladder or in her rectum or what have you. That's the mechaber. So the Mechaber, she's taller no matter what. He takes Rabbi Yossi at face value. So now the Rama says, Yesh Oimrim, that you can only be master if she was sitting, and if she was sitting when she urinated. But if she was standing, then it depends. If she forcefully jetted, if you have it came out in a stream and went into the bowl and you find blood there, then she's taller. But if it's dribbling on the side, on the edge of the basin, and later, and then you find blood over there, then she's tummy, because then you have, because it's a narrow space over there, then therefore it may have backed up to the urine and
blood. She's dripping urine?
No, blood we're talking about. If it was only urine, if you only found urine, there's nothing to worry about. We're talking about
urine mixed with blood.
That's what we're talking about.
The majority is urine.
Doesn't matter the majority. Even one drop of blood from the uterus is enough to be metabolized.
So dribbling urine with a little blood?
Yes, that's what we're saying, according to this opinion. Then he brings other opinions. Even when she's sitting, maybe you can only be master when she's screaming forcefully and you find the blood inside the basin. But if you find it on the side of the basin, then she'd be tummy. And if she was standing, then either way she's tummy. Because again, that's based on choices. Understandings. He have a few different possible understandings of what Rabbi Yossi is saying. And then I'm on just saying that's the minimum. Again, then you have the distinction. Right, okay, medically is a different matter, but halakhically this is...
The urine, it's automatically...
Not automatically.
From the urine, unless you have a period.
Maybe, okay, whatever. The point is that it may have backed up and then come from the urine. So again, if she feels pain when she's urinating, then we can assume it came from a sore, et cetera. Yeah. Okay. So it gets a little bit complicated, but yeah. Okay. Fine. Mishnah thing. More about something. Hishila chaluka lemechut. Suppose you have a woman who had a shirt which she lent out. She lent out to a goyim. Hishila means she lent out. Yeah.
And if she borrowed?
Borrowed is shalom. Hishila means she lent out. By the way, it's interesting. In Lashon Kodesh, in Lashon Chachamim anyway, you have a distinction. You have a verbal distinction between the lending of things that you get back the exact same item that you're normally going to get back the exact same item versus the lending of things that you don't. The lending of things that are meant to be consumed, and then if the person returns the equivalent value, is called in Lashon Kodesh halva. That's your loiva and malva and whatever. You're lending somebody $100, for example. You're not expecting the exact same $100 back. They're going to spend it, milvalai salnitna, as the Gemara says, and later on they're going to pay you back an equivalent amount of $100. As opposed to, you lend somebody your shirt, you expect to get back the same shirt. Yeah. So that's a difference in terminology, she'ela versus halva. Yeah.
It's only Lashon Kodesh.
It's only maybe other language. Maybe some other languages have that distinction. English doesn't have that distinction. In English, you lend money, or you lend a shirt. It's just the same word. In other languages, I don't know. Okay, anyway. So the Mishnah.
Lending money is assumed that you're not going to get the same.
That's the point. So in English, you don't have that distinction. You don't have, right, but, okay, yeah. Right. So the Mishnah says, Yishila chalukah l'nachri. Suppose that a woman had a shirt, and she lent it to a goita, oy l'nida, or she lent it to a woman who was a nida, and then Rashi says, then afterwards she put it on, after she got it back from the goita or from the nida, and she found a stain on it. So the question is, did it come from the other woman, or did it come from her? Hareza tolava, she can attribute the stain to them, and therefore she's told.
To the goita.
To the goita or to the nida. because, well, after, so according to, so Rashi doesn't clarify, but obviously that's the meaning. There was no stain on it, but the point is, in other words, Rashi says, the point is that by attributing it to them, it's not going to mess up anything for them. Namely, in other words, a goita is, anyway, Tomei Midrabanan, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. A nida is any, no, but the point is, she's anyway Tomei, as if she was a nida, Midrabanan. We learned that in the fourth Masechta. No, touching somebody the other person is an avat truma, so you become a rishon truma. I don't know if that no, I don't. I don't yeah, but pastors, the pastor said it's a
waitress could not serve truma.
The pastor's not, because midrabanan, she's considered an idiot. Yeah. Okay. That's how it is. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, so like this, by attributing the stain to the goita, that doesn't mess anything up for her, because she's anyway Tomei Midrabanan. By attributing it to the nida, the Jewish nida, again, you're not messing up anything for her because she's already Tomei anyway. Therefore, she's already Tomei because she's a nida.
Oh, a nida.
In other words, So like this, therefore, you're allowed to assume that this stain came from them. As opposed to, Rashi says, suppose that this woman lent it to another Jewish woman who was not a nida, and now she gets it back and finds a stain on it. Now both of them are talking to someone. So there's no reason to assume it came from one versus the other. By the way, so Rashi mentions over here the case where she lent it to them, and then she put it back on and found a stain on it. The Rashba explains the case slightly differently, that the case is that you lent it to them, and then they found a stain on it. So again, the question is, was the stain there when you lent it to them, or did they produce it? And most of the Mephoshim explain that the Rashba and Rashi aren't actually arguing. They're just presenting different possible scenarios. Each one of them feels that there's a greater chiddush in the scenario that they presented, but they would both agree, la halacha, that either scenario is that. Continues the mission. Gimel noshim shalav shukholokach. I'd suppose that three women all wore the same shirt, one after the other. Or another case, the three of them sat on one bench. Again, one sat there, then one of them got up and the second one sat down. And later on, the second one got up and the third one sat down. The nimcha all of dam, and you find blood on the clothing or on the bench. Kulam tneis, all of them are tameh, because there's no particular reason to assume that the blood is more from one of them than the other.
They sat on the same bench.
They sat on the same bench, or they all wore the same shirt. So therefore, we have to assume that all three of them are talking. On the other hand, Yoshua sat social Eben, if they sat on a stone bench, or they sat on a ledge in the bathhouse. It was a ledge.
Wooden ledge?
No, it's made out of stones or bricks or whatever that are attached to the ground. Rav Nechemia Mitana. Rav Nechemia says she's tar. Shahoyer Rav Nechemia Oma, because Rav Nechemia used to say, as we learned in the previous Perek, Kol Davar She'ena Makabel Tuma, Ena Makabel Ksamim. Anything which is not able to be Makabel Tuma is not able to, the Chachamim are not Matami, a woman from a Kesem of it. And therefore, since a stone bench is not Makabel Tuma, and the Itzava also is made out of stone, or it's attached to the ground or whatever, it's also not Makabel Tuma. So therefore, Rav Nechemia is saying we don't have to worry about a blood stain on it. This is, by the way, we're going to see in the Gemara other examples of it, but one thing, this is Negea nowadays, first of all, I mentioned before about a toilet, whether it's a Kabbalah Toma or not, but another example is suppose a woman wipes herself after going to the bathroom and discovers blood on the tissue, or on the toilet paper, whatever. Toilet paper is not a Kabbalah Toma. So therefore, in that case, whatever it is, I mean, it's not Makabel Tumah, because it's not considered a keli. That's Makabel Tumah. So in that case, then she doesn't have to worry about a kesem on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So she would be
tar. So she'd be tar, even though there's blood on it, right? I mean, I think actually the halacha is, in that case, she does have to do a bedikah. If she does a bedikah and she finds blood, with a regular bedikah cloth, and she finds blood, then she's tamei. But just the fact that she found blood on the tissue itself is not enough to be the tamei her mind.
Who's fasting like this?
I believe that's consensus of the poskim acharonim. So Gemara says, Omar Rav. So Rav says like this, when we said in the Mishnah that the case is, let's say the woman lent the shirt to a goita, and then later on a blood stain is found on it, and we're not sure whether it came from her or whether it came from the goita. So Omar Rav, we said that we can attribute it to the goita, but Omar Rav benochris haroya, this would only apply to a goita who is seeing blood. Meaning, as Rashi says, she's an adult. We know that she's already menstruated at least once. Most of the Rishonim agree with Rashi's explanation. The Rambam, it's not so clear. You have the Magid Mishnah and the Kesef Mishnah argue on what the Rambam says on this halacha. Does the Rambam say that? No, in other words, the point is, if she's a girl below the age of menstruation, then you can't be toiler in her because there's no particular reason to assume the stain came from her. But the question is, does it have to be that a Goyish woman is actually menstruating right now? According to Rashi and most other Rishonim, no. In fact, the Magid Mishnah also wants to explain the Rambam that way. That no, it doesn't mean she has to be menstruating right now. It means as long as she's of the age where we know that she's menstruated at least once, then for the rest of her life, any time that a Jewish woman lends her a shirt, she can assume, if she finds a bloodstain afterwards on it, that it came from this goit. As opposed to the Kesef Mishnah understands the Rambam to be saying that no, that the Rambam, that he understands the Rambam to be saying that this dispensation would only apply if the goita is currently menstruating. Okay. So anyway, so there's two different ways of explaining Rav. This must be my, how does Rav know that? Because he says, Jumia the Nidda, because the Mishnah mentions the two cases, one where it was a goita and one where it was a Nidda. Ma nida de kachazia. Now a nida, Jewish nida, means that she's actually seeing blood now. Af nochus de kachazia. The same thing with the goita. It has to be either that she's seeing blood now, or at least that previously she's seen blood. But if she's too young to have menstruated yet, then you can't be told on her. Okay. Amud of Sheshes, however, of Sheshes doesn't like this explanation. He says kinayin v'shochiv rab amr lahashmaita. Rav must have said this statement when he was about to fall asleep. Now, what is that? Now, what is Rav? Naim v'shochiv means like he was falling asleep. So what does that mean? So there's an explanation that the Raivad brings, and the Chabas Yer brings in more detail. The Chabas Yer has a famous trucha we've talked about it a number of times, about harsh language that we find the Chachamim using to each other in the Gemara, and one of them is he mentions this. It seems like a very chutzpahdik thing for Rav Sheshes to say on Rav, but he says, actually, on the contrary, that Rav Sheshes is saying there's an expression of respect for Rav. He's saying this statement is so obviously wrong that the only possible way Rav could have said it is if he was falling asleep and he didn't have a chance to catch himself and correct himself. If he had said it when he was fully alert, he would never have said it, or he would have corrected himself right afterwards. Right. Anyway, why is that? Rav Sheshes says, why can't I agree with that explanation? To Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Tola Benochris, the Braisa says that the woman who owns the shirt can attribute the blood stain to the goita that she lent it to. Rav Meir Oymer Benachris or Oyoliris. Rav Meir is saying it has to be a goita who's of the age of seeing blood. No. According to the Tanakhama, it seems that not, even if the goita is below age. It sounds like the Tanakhama would be. Well, because in the Mishnah, we said Rashi mentioned on the Mishnah, the point is we have to consider this person that we want to attribute the blood stain to, if we do that, is that going to cause them a kill call? Is that going to mess them up as far as the Mokhtum of a child? A goita, whether she's an adult or a child, no, because either way she's tummim. It's a rabbanim. The fact that you're going to say a blood stain came from her is not going to make her any more tummim than she already was. Therefore, you're allowed, al pi halacha, to attribute it to her. So therefore, the Tanakhama, it sounds like, says there's no difference what age she is, even if she's below age, because she's always tummy anyway. Even Rav Meir is only saying that it has to be that she's of the age to be able to be menstruating. He doesn't require that she's actually previously menstruated. In other words, even Rav Meir seems to be saying, fine, she has to be at least 12 years old, let's say. All goites we said are tummy majabam. We consider
whether age or not.
But we're saying like this. The Tanakhama is saying, let's say, so you lent the shirt to a 10-year-old girl. The Tanakhama is saying you can be toiler in her. Rav Meir is saying she has to be at least of the age to menstruate. So fine, she has to be 12, let's say. So Rav Meir would say fine, but even Rav Meir is not saying we actually have to know that she's previously menstruated. So fine, she's 12, but not all girls get their periods at 12. Some of them only start at 14, 15, or whatever. According to Rav Meir, as long as she's of the age when she could be menstruating, then that's good enough to be told. So what is Rav saying that we have to know for a fact that she's previously menstruated, or according to the Kesef Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam, that she's actually currently menstruating? Neither the Tanakhama nor Rav Meir is saying that. Amar Rava, so Rava says, to answer Rav Sheshes' objection, the Tisbara Rav Meir L'chumra. So Rava says, what are you thinking? Are you thinking that Rav Meir is coming to be Machmir over the Tanakhama? Rav Meir L'kula. On the contrary, we can prove from another Braisa that Rav Meir is actually coming to be Makel over the Tanakhama. the Tanya, because we have another Braita, Eina Toila Menachris. A second Braita says that the woman, the Jewish woman who owns the shur, cannot attribute the blood stain to a goita that she lent it to. Rameir Omer Toila. Rameir says she could attribute it to her. So we see Rameir is Nakel. So you, Rav Sheshet, are assuming from the first Braita that Rameir is Machmir, and therefore you're saying you have no basis for Rav's opinion, but we see that Rameir is actually Makel. So then we obviously have to understand the first Braita differently. The El Akashah, so then we have a problem then with the first Braita. The fact is, the first Braita, it sounds like Rameir is being Machmir, where again, the Tanakhama says it doesn't matter the age of the Goita, and Rameir says at least she has to be of the age to menstruate, like 12 years old. So no. The answer is, Rava says, you have to reinterpret the first Braita like this. The Tanakhama would be saying, when can you attribute the blood stain to the goita? The Tanakhama would say, v'hi sharoya, only if she's actually menstruating, either currently or previously, whatever, according to the different Rishonim. Reb Meir says that no, you can attribute it to her even if she's only of the age to be menstruating, the Alpha P chain Roya, even if we don't know that she, even if she hasn't necessarily menstruated yet. So we see that in the
she potentially could be.
So therefore we see in the first Bryce that also Reb Meir is Mekel. So therefore it comes out, therefore, the Yud of Sheshis are saying I can't accept Rav's opinion because it's contradicted by the first Bryce. No, once we understand the first Bryce properly, then we understand the Tanakhama of that Bryce is saying exactly what Rav says, that only if this goita is roya, only if she is currently or previously, whatever, menstruating, but in other words, we know that she has at least once, then we can be toila her. If not, then not. That's exactly what Rav is saying. So in other words, if the girl is underage, you definitely can't be toila in her. If she's of age but has never yet menstruated, you also can't be toilet in her, says the Tanakhama, and says Rabble. So it has to have been that she menstruated at least once previously, or according to the Kesed Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam, that she's actually currently menstruating. Right? Okay. Fine, so in that case, so in other words, so we don't have to accept Rav Sheshis' objection to Rav's statement, because actually, once we understand the first Braisa properly, then Rav is saying exactly the same thing as the Tanakhama of that Braisa. The halacha is, in fact, well, not all the Amoraim were familiar with all the brises. So Rav is saying a statement, which we end up finding a brisa that supports what he says. The halacha is, in fact, like Rav in that. Okay. Turn it up, woman. We learn in a brisa more about when can you be tola in somebody. Again, a woman lent somebody a shirt. She finds a blood stain in it. In Rashi's scenario, after she got it back and wore it. In Rashba's scenario, while the second woman was wearing it, whatever. Either way, it amounts to the same thing. So, we learn in a brisa, Tola b'shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim b'sheni shalom. Another example where she can attribute it to the other woman. We gave in the Mishnah two examples. One where the one she lent it to were the goita, and then we had Rav's detail that it has to be that she's menstruating. Or the second case was she lent it to a Jewish nida. So now we have more examples. She can also attribute the blood stain to a shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim on the second day. We learned before, what is a shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim? You have a woman during the 11 potential days of ziva. If she has bleeding one day or 2 days, then she's a shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim. She's a zovek tana. She only needs one clean day on a daraisa level. It's not like that anymore, but that's shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim. She only needs one clean day, and then she can tovel if she's taller again.
Nice.
So let's say you had a shemeres yoyim k'neged yoyim. Let's say you had a woman who was a zovek tana on Sunday. Let's say the first woman lent it to her on Monday. Now, Monday is not necessarily a day when she has a chazaka of bleeding. She only had the chazaka yesterday. Nevertheless, you can still attribute the blood stain to her. There's going to be a slight bit of kilkul, because if we attribute the blood stain to her, it means that she's going to have to and have one more clean day. It means that Monday is going to be a tameh day, and she's going to need Tuesday to be a clean day, and she can only go to the mikvah Tuesday. She's going to only go to the mikvah Tuesday, and she's only mutter to her husband Tuesday night. That's not enough of a kilkul to say that we can't be toilet in her. Again, you have the point that Rashi made in the Mishnah, which is going to drive the Gemara over here, that when there's no or very little kilkul that's going to be caused by attributing the blood stain to this other woman, then we are allowed to do that. Such as here, where she only loses one day, then you're able to do that.
And then more than that, how much?
Well, so that's what we're going to discuss. Over Seferes Shiva Shaloi Tavla. Another example, says the Braisa, she can attribute it to a woman who is counting 7 days after being a Zava Gdola who has not toiled yet. Now, there, the Kilkul is bigger because now she loses the entire 7-day count. But nevertheless, we still say that we can be toiled in her. Because the fact is, right now, she's tummy. So therefore, in other words, we can say she's now Tomei. Okay, so she has another blood stain that made her Tomei again. Does it mean she's unlike in the cases of Mishnah, where you're not Mekalkal her at all, because a Goita is Tomei either way, a Nida is Tomei either way. Here, you're being Mekalkal her one day, or possibly even all 7 days. Nevertheless, you can do it. Lefichach, therefore, the result of doing that is he mitukenes v'chaver amakokelas divid of Shimon Gamliel. So therefore, if Shimon Gamliel says the result is therefore that the first woman, let's give him names, Rachel and Leah. So Rachel is the owner of the shirt; she lent it to Leah. So let's say Leah again was either a shemeres yom keneged yom, or she was in the middle of her 7 clean days, and we find a blood stain on it. We're going to say we're going to attribute that blood stain to Leah. Therefore, Rachel remains tahor. She's Mr. Kenneth. She's still in good shape. She's still to her and mutter to her husband. And the other woman, Leah, is going to be Mokokelos, is going to be messed up. She's going to need an extra 1 day or an extra 7 days, as the case may be. Give it up, Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe Yoma Eina Tola. Rebbe says, no, you can't do that. You can't attribute the blood stain to Leah because in either of these cases, because you are being a talcum her. You're messing her up. You're making her lose 1 day or 7 days, as the case may be. Lefichach, therefore, says Rebbe, stay in Mekukalis. So the result is, well, that's what it means, that both of them are Mekukal. We don't know, therefore, we have no particular reason, Rebbe would say, to think that the blood stain came from Leah more than from Rachel. So the result is both Rachel and Leah are Tamei Misafik. The result is Rachel is going to be Tamei Misafik, and depending whether it's her doing her Yemei Nidah or Yemei Ziva, she's going to need a certain number of days before she can total. If it's doing her Yemei Nidah, she's going to need 6 more days. If it's doing her Yemei Ziva, she's going to need 1 day. And Leah also is going to lose her count up to that point of Shemeres Yom Kineged Yom, or 7 clean days, as the case may be. Says Rebbe. The Shavin, continues the Braisa, both Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe do both agree, Shetola b'Shemeres Yom Kineged Yom Berisha, inshallah, that suppose she lent it to a Shemeres Yom Kineged Yom on the first day when she bled, where there she has a chazaka that entire day is called Mayan Pasuach, that whole day. We assume that she's going to be bleeding any time during that day. So therefore you're able to attribute the blood stain to her. And anyway, she's also not losing out anything from it because she was tummy that day anyway. You can also suppose that Leah, who she lent the shirt to, is a woman who recently gave birth and has 33 or 66 days of Dam Toyar. Again, we're allowed to attribute the blood stain to her. Even Rebbe will agree with that. Because again, it's not messing her up at all because she's taught her during that period anyway. Also, suppose that Leah is a basula and she just had her first relations with her husband, and we say that we're going to learn later on in the next parak, that for a certain number of days after that, we're going to learn that for a certain number of days afterwards, her blood is considered tahor because we assume it came from the hymen rather than from the uterus. Nowadays, again, we don't do that because it's easy to confuse them, but whatever, the original halacha was that you're able to do that. So then, also, Shadamea Sahur, and in that case also, her blood is Sahur. So therefore, even Rebbe would agree that you can attribute the blood stain to her. Okay. So the question is, L'fichach did Rav Shimon Gamliel Lomali? Okay, thus far the Braisa. Now, why did Rav Shimon Gamliel have to add his line, L'fichach, therefore, Rachel is okay and Leah is messed up? Isn't that obvious? If we said that we can attribute the blood stain to Leah, even though she's losing 1 day or 7 days, as the case may be, obviously Rav Shimon Gamliel says that Rachel is okay and Leah is messed up. Nice. So what do we need that? The answer is Mishum de Rebbe. You're right. We didn't really need that. The reason why we have.
What should we say?
He could have just said, he says his din, that you can attribute to a Shemeres Yom Kineged Yom on the second day, or Seferes Shiva, and that's it. He doesn't have to mention the Lefichach. The answer is you're right. He didn't really need it. The reason why he mentions it is because Rebbe has a Lefichach. So therefore, for parallelism, Rav Shimon Gamliel also has a Lefichach. To summarize that, okay, so Lefichach de Rebbe Lomali. What do we need Rebbe's Lefichach? When Rebbe says that both of them are messed up, what is that adding? We know that he's saying you can't be tolan. Yeah. The answer is Maudetema. You could have thought that Rebbe would say, okay, you can't necessarily attribute it to the second woman, but after all, Hahid Ishtakach Kesem Gabot Iskalkel, after all, we should say that maybe only the one who the bloodstain was found while she had the garment should be the one who's messed up. Only she's the one who now is Sofik Tomei. Idach Leit Iskalkel, the first one, after all, the bloodstain wasn't even found when she had it. And we have Kan Nimsa, Kan Hoya. We have a concept in Halacha that where Tumah is found, we assume it was there. So maybe Rebbe should be saying that Rachel is not messed up. Kamash Malan, that is the Chiddush that nevertheless Rebbe does not say that. He says that actually both of them are messed up. The suffix is an equally balanced suffix. That's what he's saying, Lepichach. He wants to clarify, I'm not just saying that you can't be Tola in Leah. I'm not just saying you can't be Tola and Leah in the cases where when she's a Shemeres Yom Tenegadiyah and we're counting 7 clean days. I'm saying not only you can't be Tola in her, but you can't even say that she's the only one who's Mekulkol and the other one is not. You have to say it's exactly balanced. It's a 50-50 chance that it came from Rachel or from Leah, and therefore both of them are Mekulkol.
The Shicha implies consequences.
Yes. Consequently, because you can't be Tola and Leah, therefore the result is that Rachel and Leah are both Tom and Isaac. Right. Okay. Tosfos over here discusses in connection with the next part of the sugya that maybe there's a distinction whether she counted the entire 7 clean days or only some of them, but that's going to be for the next piece of Gemara over here. So the Gemara says, Omer of Chisa. Suppose you have a case like this. You have two paths. One of them is known to be Tahar and one of them is known to be Tomei. So one of them, for example, is afterwards, another 10 minutes. Let's say two paths. One of them is known to be Tahar. We know, let's say, that there's a dead body buried underneath it. The other one is known to be Tahar. So suppose you have two people walked on those paths. Tomei v'tahor shaholcho b'shnei shvilin. One person was Tomei. We know that the shvilin are echad Tomei v'echad Tomei. Right. We know that a Tomei person walked on one of those paths, and a Tahor person walked on the other one of those paths. But we don't know which one is which. We don't know which one walked on which path. So the Rav Chisda says, Bonu l'machlokas Rebbe v'Rav Shimon Gamliel. We come out in the same circumstances, the machlokas of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel, who's saying you can be Tola in the one who's already Mekulkol, even though it means you're messing them up further, he's going to say, therefore, the one who's Tomei is assumed to have walked on the Tomei path. It means he's going to lose his whole, the number of days that he counted so far. Let's say, for example, he's Tomei mess previously. Let's say, for example, he's already been sprinkled with part Adrama water on the third day. He's only waiting for the seventh day for the second sprinkle. And then he's going to Tovah and he's going to be Tahar. In between, he walked on one of these paths. Rav Shimon Gamliel with Rav
Sprinkle on the third and the seventh day.
Right.
After he became.
So Rav Chisda is saying, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, tough luck. You still make him start all over again. Whereas Rebbe, who says you don't attribute to the one who's Mekulkol, if they're going to lose out something by it, Rebbe would say that no, we can't necessarily assume the Tomei person walked on the Tomei path. Maybe he walked on the Tahar path. Yeah, well, he's Machmer on both. Right. He's Machmer on the Tahar one, right. Well, no, he's Machmer on the Tahar one and Mekul on the Tomei one.
Well, the Tomei needs it, Tomei and the Machmer.
Well, the point is the Tomei is no more, but the point is, if we said no, because according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, according to Rav Chisda's understanding, Rav Shimon Gamliel would be Machmer on the Tomei person. He would tell him, even though you're already 5 days into your 7 days of Tara, you still have to start all over again, because you may have walked on the Tomei path.
Okay.
Whereas Rebbe would say, not necessarily. Rebbe would say that maybe not. Maybe you may have walked on the Tara path. So here's where Tosfos says that again, we're not talking about that he did the full 7 days and he was sprinkled water because if he's losing the entire 7 days, you wouldn't necessarily say that you're going to be so machmor. And we're talking about that he counted part of the days, Tosfos says. Maskifur of Ada, however, of Ada acts on that. You're telling me that's the same exact machlokas of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Why? Ad kan l'ka'omer Rebbe hosam. You know why Rebbe is saying in the case of the shirt that both women are equally tamei. El tavayu ki adavinu. After all, both women are on the same level. Both them, there's a 50-50 chance. Both them had a chazaka of being tahor. The one was completely tahor. The other one is already on the day when she's a shemeres dance megajayim. She just needs to tovel. That no, a nida can only tovel at night. A zava actually can tovel during the day. So this woman technically could tovel any time during the day. In principle, actually, we're going to learn at the very end of the Masechta that in theory she could even have relations with her husband right after that. The problem is, if later that day she has another flow of blood, then retroactively it means she was tamei, and it means therefore that she was also to be with her husband. So she's not supposed to do that.
Yes.
No. Well, that's not even mefresh. That's a different matter. That's as far as term of a conscience. No. What we mean is no. If she has a flow of blood on Sunday, she needs Monday as a clean day.
Right.
If she has a flow anytime on Monday, then Monday is also a tummy day, and Tuesday needs to be the clean day.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? She told her, let's say, Monday morning, and she had relations with her husband after that. What happens if Monday afternoon she has a flow? It turns out, Sunday and Monday, she's still a Zavakana. It turns out, retroactively, that her Tevila didn't help, and she was also to be with her husband. So therefore, we're going to learn in the next set, she's not supposed to do that. She's supposed to wait until the evening, and only then. She can tovel during the day. We don't say, but she could tovel during the day. She's supposed to wait until the evening. She can only have to wait until the evening to have relations, right? Anyway, the point is that in those cases, both women have a chazaka of being tahor. Hacha may nafkalan mina, as opposed to over here, in the case of the two people, what's the difference? The one person is tamei already. So the one person is tamei already. So whether you attribute the tamei path to him or not, he's going to be tamei either way. So therefore, Rebbe might say that even in that case, you could attribute that he is the one who walked on the tamei path. You don't have to say that Rebbe would say that it's a 50-50 chance either one, says Rav Chisda. Okay. V'Rav Chisda, what does Rav Chisda answer to that? He says, fine, but so, the fact of the matter is, even in this case, okay, fine, she's a shemeres yom keneged yom. Yes, it's on a day when she has a chazaka of being tahor, but the fact of the matter is, she needs to tovel in order to be tahor. Until she tovels, she is tamei. And yet Rebbe is saying you can't attribute it to her. So therefore, Rav Chisda is still sticking to his guns, but I would still say, therefore, there's no difference in this case when one person is tamei and one person is tahor, because in that case, you also have Rachel is tahor and Leah is tamei. As she has the possibility of being tahor, fine, but the fact is she hasn't yet gone to the mikveh. She's still right. Okay.
Until she actually goes
to the mikveh. Okay. So now we have a discussion on this point. Amar Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, Tomei v'Tahor. Suppose you have one person who's Tomei and another person who's Tahor, or v'afilu Tahor v'Tolori, or even one person who is definitely Tahor and the other one who is Tolori, who we're not sure is Sofik Tomei, and those two people, Shahocha v'Shnei Shvil, and Achav Tomei v'Achav Tahor, and the two people walked on the two paths, one of which is Tomei and one of which is Tahor, and we're not sure, right? And they walked on the two paths, one of which is Tomei and one of which is Tahor, and we don't know which one walked on which one. Tola Tomei v'Toli v'Tahor v'Tahor, the different hackle. So he says, similar to Rav Chisda, that we can say that he says actually different than Rav Chisda. He says everybody would agree. He says actually like Rav Abba, similar to Rav Abba. Everybody would agree, both Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe, who argue about the case of the shirt and the two women, they would agree in this case that you can attribute that the Tomei person walked on the Tomei path and the Tahor person walked on the Tahor path. So the Tahor person will remain Tahor and the Tomei person will remain Tomei or have their Tomei reinforced, and they have to start their counting and their sprinkling with paradrum water all over again. Okay. Okay, the Gemara says.
So not like
Rav Chisda's understanding of the Machlokas, but rather more like Rav Abba's understanding. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rav Yochanan mir Rav Yehuda bar Livoi. Rav Yochanan asks Rav Yehuda bar Livoi the following question. We're talking about this case where Rachel had a shirt which she lent to Leah, and we're talking about when are we allowed to assume that the stain that we found on the shirt came from Leah, and therefore that Rachel is okay, versus when not. And we have to assume it may have come from Rachel. What about Mal Litlis Kesem V'Kesem? Suppose that Leah is Tomei from having seen a Kesem, from having seen a blood stain on her own garments. No, forget about the Magenta. On her own. In, like the cases that we had in the previous paddock. Like the cases we have in the previous paddock, that she has a blood stain on her clothing below the waist. We can't attribute that she didn't walk through the butcher shops or whatever, and therefore we have to assume that it came from her. So the question is, Leah is Tomei on the grounds of a Kesem, the Kesem which is the Rabbanon,
on her
own clothes. Now Rachel lent her a shirt, and then later on we find a blood stain on it. Can Rachel assume that the stain also came from Leah, or do we have to assume that maybe it came from Rachel? So I'll live it. In other words, if Leah is definitely was definitely a Roya, she's a Nidor, a Zava, as the case may be, sure, you can be totally on her. But like this, where she only had a Kesem, and a Kesem is always a suffix, whether it actually came from her or not, we're only Matama her Medirabonim because of the suffix, can we attribute this new Kesem to her?
But if she saw, let's say, Rachel lent her a clothing,
mm-hmm.
a shirt,
yeah.
but Leah saw a stain on one of her own shirts, what about the shirt that Rachel lent her? Is it Tame or is it Tame?
Well, it would be Tame because of Nidor wore it. Fine, that's another matter. Fine, it would be Tame Midrabban. But that's not the point we're getting at, because they are all you need is fine. The shirt has to go to the mikveh, but Rachel herself is still Tahar.
Right.
The question is over here, when we find a blood stain on it afterwards, when Rachel lent the shirt to Leah, we find a blood stain on it. We don't know if it came from Rachel or from Leah. Mm-hmm. Had Leah been a Nida or a Zava, no question, we could attribute it to her. On the other hand, had she been a Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom, then we have the Machlokes of Shem Gamliel and Rebbe. What about if Leah is Tomei Midrabanan on the grounds of a Kesem? Can we assume that this new stain also came from her? Or maybe not.
Or from Rachel.
Or do we have to assume it may have come from Rachel? I'll live it to Rebbe Loisi Boilach. So Rabbi Yechanan says, if you're talking according to Rebbe, then there's no question. Hashta, because we have to consider what Rebbe says. Uma hosam b'kachazim itgufa. Mabuch, in the case of the Shemeres Siyam Keneged Yom, where she actually knows that blood came from her body, Amrit Eina Tola, and yet Rebbe is saying that you cannot attribute a blood stain to her. It's a 50-50 chance that it came from Rachel or from Leah. How much more so where it was only a Kesem? Hochadim Al-Makasi, here where the Kesem may well have come from someplace else, and it's only Midrabanan that we're remembering her. Loi Kolshagain, how much more so Rebbe would say that Rachel can't attribute it to Leah. She has to consider that there's a 50-50 chance it came from her. Therefore, she'd be coming.
Who would be coming?
Rachel, the owner of the shirt. Because the blood stain, we can't assume the blood stain came from Leah. Rebbe is saying that you can't attribute it to Leah, even when Leah is a Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom. How much more so when Leah is only Tamei Midrabanan? Ki tiboy lachalib de Rav Shimon Gamliel. The question would be specifically according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. The question would be, Hosim Huda Kachazim is Gufatalia. You would say, maybe Rav Shimon Gamliel says, when we know that Leah had a flow of blood, which we know definitely came from her, then Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, can attribute a new stain to her. But, Hachadim Al Makasi, but here, where Leah to begin with is only Tomei because of a stain, which may well have come from some external source anyway. It's not even necessarily her blood.
I would say for Ria, yes, but not for Kesem.
Maybe, right. Right. So therefore, Loi Talia. So maybe Rachel cannot attribute the stain to Leah. Oh, Joma Loi Shno. Maybe there's no difference. Either way, Leah is Tomei. And you can. Omer Lei, sort of Yehuda Bar Levi answers in Ein Tolin. You cannot be Tolin. You cannot attribute it. Rachel has to consider she's Tomei.
Even according to Rav Shimon Gamliel.
Matam, what's the reason? Lefi she'ein tolin, because you can't attribute it. So what does that mean? So Rashi explains that it means precisely what you said. The possibility is the original kesem that made Leah Tomei may well have come from some external source. So we can't say that's not a strong enough reason to assume, therefore, we're only Matame her misafik. It's not a strong enough reason to therefore say that she has a chazaka of blood coming from her that we should now say that this blood stain came from her. On the other hand, the Aruch explains this line, Matam, if he changed her a little differently. He says that's it. It's a Kabbalah. It's a known fact, la halacha, that you can't be Torah. You want to ask why? You don't need a reason why. The reason why is because that's the halacha, period. Yeah, you have an expression like that in a number of other places in Shas also, including Hazman Grama. In Masechta Shabbos, you have a whole sugya about the dinim of lighting the menorah on Hanukkah. That comes as a continuation of you have a parak b'memedlik in the second parak of Shabbos. It talks about what kinds of oils and wicks are you allowed to use to light Shabbos candles. So that naturally segues into a discussion of which oils and wicks you can use for the menorah on Hanukkah, and the halachas you can use any of them. You have a similar thing in the Gemara and Shabbos over there, where you have, let's say you mix a fuel that you're not allowed to use together with a fuel like oil that you are allowed to use, that you're allowed to use a mixture. So he says also ein madlikin matam. Why? Let's see, ein madlikin because you can't light. So the aruch again explains a similar idea. That's just how it is.
Shabbos you can use anything you want.
No, you cannot. There's a halacha. There's certain wicks and certain oils that don't burn evenly, and therefore you're not allowed to use them on Shabbos because the Chachamim are concerned because they don't burn cleanly and evenly. You're likely to try and adjust the wick or something in order to make it burn brighter, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So you have, for example, there's a whole list in the Mishnah over there, certain kinds of wicks that are made out of certain kinds of materials, certain plant fibers, for example, and other things, certain kinds of fuels, like, for example, what do you have over there, a certain kind of bird oil, or a certain kind of
fumes?
Yeah, whatever. Not fumes necessarily, but they don't burn, they don't get drawn up easily into the wick. And therefore, you're likely to try and play around with the flame a little bit to get it. You can't do that on Shabbos. Right. Okay.
The paraffin, you could.
The paraffin burn clean, yeah. Actually, it's interesting. The Mishnah does mention over there that you can't use wax. However, the Poskim explain that's only when you have a liquid pool of wax. With a wick in it, that you can't use. But when you have wax made into a candle, that you can use.
Liquid wax?
Liquid beeswax, for example, doesn't...
You're not allowed to use it.
As Shabbos candles, right.
Because
it doesn't burn so cleanly. But when you make a candle,
solid wax,
that you can. Yeah. And paraffin, same thing. Paraffin burns very cleanly.
Solid paraffin, you can?
You can, yeah.
Liquid paraffin.
Liquid paraffin, I'm not sure about. So the mission is...
Smell.
Maybe.
They're telling you in the
store. Okay, so things that smell offensive, you're not allowed to use anyway. That's true. For example, it mentions over there you're not allowed to use turpentine, let's say. Right. But okay, anyway. Anyway, that's another matter. Okay. Let's go down.